Hi everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. I'm Mojtaba. In today's episode, I have Babak Tawangar from Brilliant Labs. Hi Babak.
Hi Mojtaba.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. It's good to be here with you.
Thanks very much. Welcome to the All Things XR podcast. So, Babak, I know that you've been active in the XR and AI field for many years, and we knew each other for a couple of years, and I know that you've done lots of projects in the area. Can you tell us more about your background and your entrepreneurship journey?
Yeah, I got started in technology right out of undergraduate, and so, you know, it was a very interesting time for me. I think like many young people, I was looking for sort of my sphere of usefulness in this world, and I landed on three things that I felt were very interesting and had the potential to amplify human capability. One is technology, one is education, and the other one is religion, for better or worse. Mm. And so, you know, on the religious front, you know, I'm a Baha'i, and so, you know, there's no clergy in the Baha'i faith, and I knew that that was not a path that I could walk down professionally. On the education front, I am very passionate about education and what it can do in someone's life, but I just knew for some reason that I wasn't cut out to be an educator. Maybe I wasn't patient enough. And so that left me with technology, and I did an early internship at Microsoft, really got my feet wet in software, and just fell in love with what software and technology generally could be in someone's life. You know, you write it once, and at near zero marginal cost, you distribute it to over a billion people. The potential of that was just tremendously exciting to me. And so that got me started on this path. Between then and now, started a couple companies, all in the AI and big data space. Went to go work at Apple, and that's where I first got exposed to hardware. And then right out of Apple, started my current company, Brilliant Labs.
Awesome, awesome. So can you tell us about the current products of the Brilliant Labs, Noah and Frame?
Yeah, so at Brilliant, we started a couple of years ago with this really different vision for what AR should be in someone's life. And we felt it should be analogous to an iPod, where you have an affordable and pocket-sized, beautiful device that was focused function. It transformed our relationship with a creative medium and wove its way into daily moments of our lives. And for us, that medium was artificial intelligence. It started as computer vision when we first started the company. And then over the past 2 years, it's of course broadened to generative AI. So that of course is not only vision, but it includes translation, AI web search, and it'll, you know, grow to include many other things over time, you know, text to video, et cetera. So, We just launched a device called Frame, and paired with Frame is our little AI assistant called Noah. Noah's job is to see what you see and hear what you hear, and it takes your questions about all of that stuff. So its job is to really understand deeply the context around your question, your intention, and then, of course, to turn around and take that to the right AI model to answer your question. So you might want to do an AI web search. You might want to ask about something live in the news and how that interfaces with what you see. And so it goes to the right model for that. Or you might ask for some analysis of the nutrition of the food you're about to eat. It goes to the right model for that. And then, of course, fun things like image generation. You know, based on what you see, you can engage in creative dialogue with Noah, and it'll generate images iteratively. And present those right in front of your eyes in sort of a holographic AR fashion. So we really doubled down at this intersection of heads-up display AR and artificial intelligence, generative AI. And we think that story, to kind of bring it full circle, we think that that is analogous to what the iPod was for us. We think that generative AI is that creative medium, that it can transform our relationship with it and with the world at large.
How do you see the effect of generative AI as you previously worked on AR for a long time, and how do you see the current state of generative AI and its effect on the current AR glasses and actually wearables?
Yeah, generative AI is, I mean, it's still so young. I think I've been fascinated because since the ChatGPT API, the GPT API was published and made publicly available, it wasn't that long ago, but it really kicked off this boom. And there's been a flurry of activity across the industry. And, you know, it feels almost like we're forcing Gen AI to grow up faster than it should. And, you know, part of our intention with Frame is to keep it fully open source. And there's a few reasons for that, but one reason is because this thing is so new. And all of us are just trying to wrap our heads around the implications of generative AI still. You know, it's like Play-Doh. It's a creative new medium, and we're just trying it in bits and pieces in new ways, but we don't fully understand what this thing can be for us yet, and that's okay. You know, it's like a child growing up. A child needs time to kind of figure out who they are and what, you know, who their friends are and what their place is in the world. We can't force a child to wear a suit at 6 years old and go to the office. It's the same thing with new technology with great capability, just like this. So our hope is that Frame and our open source platform are a medium for experimentation. That really is our intention at this stage, that developers, whether software or hardware or anything in between, can sink their teeth into this technology and just start having fun with it, start applying it in new ways. So that's kind of how we think about it right now. Now, going forward, I do see a lot of potential. You know, there's some cool stuff happening in terms of like text-to-speech interface and making that dialogue feel a lot more natural, a lot more intuitive and just familiar. And I think that will facilitate trust. You know, so there's people doing fun personas, lowering latency and having more kind of bantery qualities the way that humans are used to. So that's sort of one bucket that I think is cool. And then another one, of course, is agentic models. So models that don't just answer the, you know, question like, oh, what is this? I think right now that makes for a fun, kind of gimmicky demo, but we know what that is. It's a bottle of water. You know, we don't need AI's help with that. What's cool is if a model can actually go and, you know, not just fetch the price and not just tell me where to buy it, but maybe even buy it for me, and get that delivered to me, or do all manner of actions upon the web, on my behalf. So we think that's a really sort of exciting area. But maybe the third, and I'll leave it there, but the third is what we call memory augmentation. So human memory is notoriously imperfect, and it is drenched in emotion. And so we are designed, our brains are not designed to remember and store perfectly everything we see and hear. It's just that, you know, it breaks the brain. Instead, we're designed to extract information, and a lot of what gets stored long term is emotional. And so, you know, an emotional engagement we had, something we're inspired by or compelled by or saddened by or angered by, it's often these things that sort of coat the memory and allow them to be deeply embedded in our psyche and our
Exactly.
long-term memory. And so we think that there's a place for AI to see the world as you see it and hear it as you hear it and complement the imperfection, the emotionality of our memory with something that is a lot more consistent and reliable, sort of a ground truth of your life for you to then query and dialogue with, but also to that have that be sort of a base to proactively prompt you with helpful information. Things that you might have forgotten about or little details that it has strung together from your past that are brought to bear on the present moment that might be useful to you. So we think that memory augmentation is another area of really high potential. So we're excited to see all these areas kind of take off in the next year or two.
Yeah, totally agree. And actually, our brain tries to forget everything because, as you mentioned, it's got a limited capacity. So, Babak, you mentioned your choice for doing this open source. How do you reach this decision, and what are the challenges? You mentioned the benefits, but what do you see as the challenges of doing this in this time?
Yeah, well, there's a couple reasons why. I mean, We think first and foremost on principle. We're about to enter this era of embodied AI, where AI is literally with you, perceiving the world as you perceive it through something like a pair of glasses. And the stakes are even higher in terms of making the technology around that inspectable, modifiable, and just commonly available to mankind. We think that on principle, there's something very important about that. So that's probably the chief reason why we felt doing this open source was important. And to clarify, we're going a lot deeper than most companies go when it comes to open source. We do open hardware as well as software, hardware, firmware, and software. So all the code around Noah, the AI assistant, it's open source. It's on GitHub. All the code that sits on the frame, hardware, it's open source. All the hardware schematics, it's open source. So we go as deep as you can go. But the other reason is that strategically, there's a lot of closed source models right now. And we just kind of, you know, like a lot of us in the industry, we're observers of what's going on in the news. And I think between, you know, antitrust regulation that governments are beginning to apply to some of these platforms, as well as lawsuits that some developers are beginning to bring against some of these platforms, I think that developers are ready for a new relationship with the platform. And I think developers want it to be one of more reciprocity. I think they want innovation on more equitable terms, not being held at arm's length. And so we see an opportunity to be that platform, that we could allow any developer to deeply integrate their software with the underlying hardware in a way that today only Apple can do. Only Apple, for example, has the control of hardware and software and do that deep integration. That was a strength for them in the past, and we think that going forward, that should be opened up to every software developer because it's better for all of us. It's better for customers. It's better for developers. So that's the second reason. But maybe the last reason is because we think the moat is not ultimately the hardware or the software. The moat is data. The moat is people using the device, is the device perceiving their lives, and then in a, at least in our case, in a privacy protecting way, which engenders trust and security. So in a privacy protecting way, you have the data trained by a model to be able to deliver a deeply personal AI experience, and one that just gets better the longer you wear it and the more life you live. So we're pretty laser focused on that piece, and so, you know, ultimately we don't think that hugging the technology as close as we can is useful for us. But there's a lot more to be gained by opening it up and letting a community build openly on top of it.
Awesome. So, Babak, I think the closest product in the market right now to Frame is Meta's Ray-Ban glasses. You know, do you see a future where Frame will be the Android one for this product category, and the others, the closed ones, are the iOS?
I mean, it's a good question. We'll have to see how things shake out. I know that the Meta Ray-Bans is a very impressive product. I've tried them, and friends of mine who own them, they enjoy wearing them on a near daily basis, and they genuinely feel well built. I think it's early days for the AI side of that product. You know, it's clear that that product was you know, really designed to capture images and video to feed back into Facebook's core kind of social properties, whether it's Instagram or others. And it feels like at the 11th hour, the team there kind of connect the dots between, you know, their Llama models on the generative AI side and then this product. So, but you know, good for them. It's great. And so I think they're going to continue leaning into that, and we're going to see more and more on the AI side get released. The thing that we are counting on, because you're right, it's probably the closest product to Frame and what we do, they will never be as open as we will. And so I think that will limit the possibilities of that product as a platform. I think that that device will always be limited to the Llama kind of line of models that Facebook themselves are developing and releasing. And while those models are good, they are just one model. And what you want is potentially to access Anthropic's models, Mistral's models, OpenAI's models, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You don't want to just be limited or relegated to one company's models. I think that's always going to limit them. But the third, and you know, this ties back to the earlier point I was making about trust and privacy. Mm-hmm. Facebook's model, as everyone knows, it's to sell ads. And so how comfortable will most people on the planet feel having their life's most intimate data available to be mined for advertising purposes? I think in the mobile era, psychologically, people felt that, hey, I can lock my phone and put it in my pocket. And so there's always an arm's length. There's always a limit. When you wear glasses and there's a camera, there's a microphone, and this thing is passively collecting ambient life data, it's not arm's length anymore. So I think, but we have to see how this pans out. I think that will leave many people feeling uncomfortable, and just uncomfortable enough that they'll look elsewhere. And so that's where we hope to, be there, not only to be more open, but also to be more privacy protecting in how we treat customer data.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, totally agree. So, Babak, the first product, I think, in this category of devices was Google Glass. And as we all know, that product, though being a very good product in my mind and in my opinion, failed. What's different this time? And why do you think the smart glasses will work this time?
Yeah, I mean, when we think about Google Glass, because I think there's a lot to learn there, we give Google a ton of credit for having the early conviction to do that device. And it inspired our team, and I think so many of us in this industry.
Yeah.
When we saw that announcement, wow. Yeah. I think that was like, whoa, it was so great. And we were rooting for them. Let's see what Google does next. I think it was an expensive device. I remember it was like $1,500 or $1,800. Mm-hmm. I think the design, it was perhaps the human factors and the industrial design didn't really lend themselves well to people feeling comfortable around someone wearing Google Glass.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there could have been something more that Google could have done there to put people at ease. But, between that time and now, we've had cameras in our lives on orders of magnitude, and I'm talking drones, of course, mobile phones, and younger generations now just feel comfortable with a mobile phone in their face. Security cameras installed in almost every indoor and outdoor building or corner. So autonomous vehicles, with little cameras embedded on the side of the chassis. So the cameras are now everywhere. And I think we've all just felt, we got to get comfortable with this thing. So, I think that now the prospect of wearing a device like this is going to start to feel less uncomfortable. And I think that that will change in terms of people's generation. Younger generations will almost feel uncomfortable without a camera in their lives. We learned a lot from Google Glass, but I think many things have happened in the world, almost on like a sociological level, to prepare us for this new moment where, once again, people can wear cameras in front of their eyes oriented outward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. We mentioned Google, we mentioned Meta, but one of the pioneers in this field was Snap with their glasses. And we hear less about them right now. What do you think about them?
Yeah, Snap is a bit of a mystery to many of us. And maybe that's intentional. I would never count any company out, especially those that are still founder-led, like Snap and like Facebook.
Yeah.
When those founders are motivated, they've got some of the smartest people working for them, and they can move mountains. So what I've heard is Evan Spiegel is one such founder. And they've, I think they're on their fourth generation now of Snap Spectacles. So I'm excited to see what they come out with next. I know they're working on stuff. You know, I do, it's interesting, you know, why the Meta Ray-Bans seems to have found their footing and why the Snap Spectacles didn't. Because the Meta Ray-Bans are in many ways, it's just a camera. There's no display. There's no optics. And it's similar to the Snap Spectacles. Snap was an original in that regard. Yeah. So I do wonder why Facebook's attempt worked and why Snap's didn't. But yeah, I mean, let's see what they come out with next.
Yeah, exactly. So, Babak, right now we see new products and form factors such as your smart glasses, Frame, Apple Vision Pro, Humane, and etc. What do you think about the post-smartphone world and products?
I think the smartphone is going to be with us for a long time. That's our take. We're very pragmatic, I guess, in that there is so much psychological and even physical muscle memory oriented around our use of the smartphone. And we've come to rely on it for many, many, many things. And so I don't think it's going away. That's why, I mean, Frame, we dovetail with the smartphone. We pair with it. We make use of it. I think that, you know, Apple is going to probably make some announcements if we believe the rumors, which will allow some pretty sophisticated AI models to run locally on a phone. Mm-hmm. That's great for us. It's probably not great for some of our colleagues who are doing, you know, devices that are meant to also fit in your pocket and interface with, you know, LLMs or other models, because it's hard to compete with Apple on their game. So I wouldn't recommend that. So for us, it's great. You know, we'd love to bring the model out of the cloud and put it in your pocket because it means latency is going to get cut dramatically. So that's great. So that, yeah, that's how we think about it. So, you know, every new paradigm is birthed from the previous one. You know, again, I think so much about, like, because, you know, I have two small kids, so I think a lot about, like, the parent-child relationship. And every human being on this planet emerged from their parents, you know, physically, but also just emotionally. And I think that's the journey of paradigm shifts in technology as well. You know, the phone will have incredible staying power, and it's been really valuable for us in our lives. And so we think that'll continue, and it'll take a number of years for this child, you know, this new emerging technology of embodied AI in smart glasses to really come into its own. And then the parent will age, and at a certain point, we'll make a decision to put our eggs in the child's basket as a fully mature adult. And that's just how the new paradigm shifts emerge over time.
Awesome. So, Babak, I know you got pretty high-profile backers for Brilliance Labs. Can you tell us more about that, and how did you attract these guys and pitch them?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty fortunate. We've got a roster of really amazing folks that are backing us and, you know, really supporting me and the founding team personally. They tend to be operators, so, you know, founders or folks who have founded companies before. You know, guys like Brendan Uribe, who founded Oculus, and Adam Chayer, who founded Siri, Eric Majkowski, who founded Pebble, and of course, John Hanke, who founded Niantic, and a whole slew of others. It's been amazing having investors who have been through the journey of building a company and can actually have insight into our journey and give really credible sort of advice, whether that's on the hardware side or whether that's on the marketing side or on the AI side, or, you know, in Eric's case, on the open source side of things. It's got incredible. They had an amazing developer community built around Pebble and did all of that open source. So we've been very fortunate. You know, part of my learning as a founder is that we talk to so many investors, and the number one investors definitely don't seek out consumer hardware companies. So we learned really fast that as a consumer hardware company, we're not going to be any investor's target. So that dramatically narrowed the pool. But of those investors left, some of them were like pure theoretical kind of MBA grad. Maybe they worked at a private equity firm or an investment bank, and then they thought VC would be fun because they like interacting with founders. Now, there's a lot of those folks. It's very theoretical, and their world is spreadsheets. The way that they think about young, creative companies is through the lens of a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those of us on the other side of the table, you know, we just know that that's not the germ that births a great company. And so, and it's hard to explain that to someone who's a pure theoretical, you know, MBA or like a spreadsheet monkey. And so, you know, we learned pretty quick that, okay, of this very limited pool of investors who would be interested in our company, look for operators, look for people who have built companies themselves, who've been burned and felt pain, but also great joy from the founder journey. And through that could lend genuine insight to what we're doing. So, yeah, we found our tribe there, and we feel very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, Babak, how does Brilliant Labs plan to support developers in creating new applications and experiences for Frame through the open source platform you mentioned?
We think about this in two phases. We are excited about the opportunity in this new era of generative AI, of rethinking the typical, maybe the I'll say it this way, the mobile phone era app store experience. So, you know, that's where like you tap on the app store app and then you have these rows and columns and, you know, the search and discovery experience is not great or it's imperfect. It's not great for a lot of emerging app developers either, because now many of these app stores, many of the wealthier developers, those with deeper pockets, larger companies, they can pay the platform to promote their app. And so, you know, we think that that sort of puts startups or independent app developers at a disadvantage because they don't have a couple million dollars to throw at the promotion of their app in the App Store or in the Play Store. So there's that. I think the business model is challenging. But then it's also just kind of clunky. The discovery process is not great because there's so many apps. There's so much noise. I think what we all want is to have apps discovered when it's contextually relevant to us. So that means the large language model, in our case, this is Noah. Noah learns that, hey, an incredible developer named Mojtaba, he built an app for podcasting. Mm-hmm. And when Frame sees that I am engaging in a podcast experience, or I'm talking to someone about scheduling a podcast or doing a podcast, that it will recommend to me this amazing app experience that Mojtaba has built. Mm-hmm. And I can then, with a snap of a finger, just like in the Matrix, Neo knew he needed to learn Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. And with a snap of a finger, he learned Kung Fu. It should feel that way. It should be relevant and contextual. It should be quick. And you should just be able to tell the device and it'll update itself. So we think that's better for the user. We think it'll feel less kind of clunky and noisy. But we also think that's great for developers because it means it's not about who paid more money to promote their app, but it meant it was just who built the best app for the right moment. So that's our vision for where we can take this. And it'll come in stages. So initially we'll need to kind of collate a lot of the, you know, curate some of the highest quality apps that emerge from the community and then collate them in sort of a nice, like, LLM searchable sort of web experience.
Yeah.
But then as quickly as possible, we'll try to bake that into the on-device Noah experience so that these apps can be pushed to you when we sense that the context is right. So that's kind of how we're thinking about
it. Awesome. So, Babak, I know you got also pretty high profile partners like Perplexity. Can you tell us also more about that?
Yeah, I mean, we got to know their team earlier this year, and we're all big fans of their product. we think AI web search is sort of a very obvious need for most of us. You know, the era of 10 blue links is becoming more stressful, more troublesome than it is useful, increasingly, and it's increasingly dominated by, similar to what I was just describing with an app store, it's dominated by those who will promote their result rather than those who are genuinely delivering the best result given your question. And so Perplexity has emerged with this product that just seems to kind of cut through all that noise and delivers you the precise answer, well cited. You know, like everything in AI, you need to kind of double and triple check these things, but that's just kind of where the space is at. But I think, you know, as the germ of a new search paradigm, they've got something really compelling. And and so we reached out, and they loved Frame. You know, I think they believe in the form factor just like we do, and it was it came together really fast. So it's been great. It's been great partnering with our team.
Awesome. So Babak, Frame also has a pretty interesting design. Can you tell us more about the design and working on the hardware of the thing?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I can. They say it's better to show than tell, and so I'll show it right here. So this is Frame, and then this is our little charging dock called Mr. Power. When you take off Mr. Power, then of course you can wear Frame, but also that allows the display to come up, so you can kind of see it if I hold it close.
Yeah.
Here, you know, this is the optic. Frame is super thin. It's about 40 grams, so the arms are very thin. You've got batteries at the ends, and you know, it's about 5 millimeter thick lens there. So it's lightweight and it's thin. It's what you want a pair of glasses to be. We worked really hard to keep things this, you know, looking this unremarkably like a pair of glasses. We felt it was important, you know, sort of dovetailing with the previous conversation about Google Glass. We thought it was important to engender trust and make people feel comfortable with a device like this in their lives. You know, we've heavily radiused all the corners, so it's all really smooth to the touch. You can fold it up easily and put it in a carrying case when you're not using it. So it's just out of your way and in your pocket. I think glass, it was hard to do that. And so some of these little human factors elements that make it something that you can keep in your life on a daily basis. I mean, the prism optic is all well integrated into the core sort of, you know, lens itself. This is our H2O color. So we've got three colors. We've got a smoky black, a light gray, and then this one is semi-transparent. So you can kind of see the PCB in there. You can see the camera. There's an OLED. There's a display up here. And then, of course, you see all the flex cabling running through the arms. So this has all been over-molded in the plastic injection process. Two-shot over-molding, which is very, very hard to get right. It leads down to the battery at the end. So we thought a lot about crafting the design of this so that it feels familiar, and yet it delivers something sort of radically different.
Yeah, awesome product. Awesome, incredible work. Congrats. I know that working on hardware, hardware is really, really hard. As a software entrepreneur myself, I salute you.
Totally. I mean, my number one advice to people who want to do hardware is don't do hardware. there is a certain, like, very wonderful satisfaction to doing it. Like, holding this product in my hands and, like, you know, I feel the 2 years of sort of blood, sweat, tears, and love that went into iterating on this, crafting this, arguing internally over what it should be and how it should feel and what it should do. Like, you feel the echoes of the whole process in this little artifact in your hand. So there's something so satisfying about doing hardware. But I think the pain of it, and I'm not even talking about the design and development process, that's a joy. It's really the pain of production, the pain of interfacing with suppliers and a whole global supply chain system, supply chain and logistics, which is really not optimized for emerging companies. It's really built for high volume. for the Samsungs and the Apples and the Philips and the, Walmarts. You know, it's really built for the high volume folks. When you emerge with something that is on relatively low volume and challenging to make, it's not some off-the-shelf widget that they can just do, you know, a billion of, then the amount of pushback, the amount of cost penalty, you know, as a startup, you end up paying dramatically more than one of these deep-pocketed larger companies purely because your volumes aren't there. And in a way, you can understand the economics around that. But in another way, you do see how the system, as it's currently designed, is really stacked against innovation. So to be a hardware entrepreneur, it does take a certain maniacal quality to puncture through that repeatedly, over and over again, sometimes in the same conversation. So it's not for the faint of heart, for sure. But there is something deeply satisfying about it.
Yeah, exactly. So what about the Noah engine, which powers Frame? Do you see a future where it acts as a standalone product?
Yeah, I mean, we've thought about this. One of the reasons that we did do it open source is because we wanted to allow developers to fork and modify all the Noah code. Mm-hmm. Even call it something different if they want to. Mm-hmm. You know, the license is very permissive, commercial or research, academic, you know, whatever people want to do with it. And so, we do want to sort of observe to see if that's something that people are interested in, if it fits with their business model. And if it does, then, we can explore doubling down on that as something that we support for other folks. So, I think that's something interesting to us, but we want to learn a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. I see. So, Babak, how do you see the future of Brilliance Labs? What are the next plans and what's the vision?
Well, right now, we are just so excited to get Frame out into the world. And so, we've got a whole backlog of pre-orders, and we're ramping multiple factories to make them. So right now the priority is just making enough to satisfy all the demand, which is a good problem to have, but it's something that the team and I are laser focused on getting right within a reasonable time frame, because we don't want people to be waiting. But beyond that, Our focus is really going to shift to nurturing an ecosystem on top of this open source platform, because, you know, for every customer, we are conscious that every one app that someone might build, you know, that might just invite another 1,000 or dare I say 10,000 customers to be attracted to our platform, to our device. You know, if you think about the phone today, all of us like our phones, you know, because not just is the hardware great, but it's the apps on the phone. And so every one of those apps is worth thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of customers for these handset manufacturers. It's the same thing for us. And so, you know, we're really focused, once we start shipping hardware, on building out that ecosystem. And we've got a Discord server. We're really trying to be community oriented in supporting developers. The whole team is in Discord. And we want to be very high touch in how we support developers to build a great app, optimize that for Frame, take advantage of Noah's capabilities, start shipping stuff that people are going to love on top of our platform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So where can our listeners actually purchase and order Frame and find you?
Yeah, so if you go to our website, brilliant.xyz, that's brilliant.xyz. So it's Brilliant spelled the usual way. You can find a link to not only purchase Frame, but you can also find a link to our documentation to learn more about what's under the hood. And then, of course, a link to our Discord server so that if people want to join the conversation, share what they want to build, you know, learn from others. If they've purchased Frame and they're hacking on it, they can get support from the team or from other people also building. So all of that is on our website. beyond that, I'm on LinkedIn or I'm on Twitter. You can find me at, you know, my name, Babak Tavangar, or at
yeah.
B Tavangar on Twitter. So.
Yeah. Awesome. We will surely put links on the description of the podcast. Well, it was great having you on the All Things XR podcast, Babak. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Mosheva. Talk again soon.
Thanks very much.